You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope that you're well today. Hope you have a great weekend planned. So I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it isn't, and it has to be done, in spite of all the things that are going on, you'll get it done and you'll do it safely. You'll be masked up, gloved up, distanced, and all of that, you know. That's right. You three W's, wear your mask, keep your distance, and wash your hands. Because it's real. And I know the vaccines are there, and I'm not a proponent or opponent. Let your conscience be your guide, you know. And I know that for some of us, it's a distance away of getting it. By that I mean you may be under 50 or under 60 for sure and no health problems. That means you may not get the vaccine or vaccine may not be available to you or that age group, maybe by spring. Because right now, they, of course, are dealing with the people who are the frontline workers and the elderly in nursing homes. This morning, I saw a nursing home that made a decision on the national news. They made a decision that they were going to maintain a bubble. And so all of the workers moved in to the nursing home. And they've been there since, and they're still there now. They moved in a nursing home back in March, April, somewhere around there. And suffice to say, there have no deaths and no coronavirus. You know, that's a drastic move, but sometimes it takes drastic measures. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcast. Click on that, and then you'll see the drop down, and they'll say African Perspectives. You click on that, and then there'll be programs that are dated and titled. And my good brother, Brother Kwaku, keeps it up to date, so it's pretty much up to date. We're going to get the programs that were on this past Wednesday and Monday. So, with Baba Barudi and the other things that we do, so they'll be there for you. And so, if you want to. And if you want to share them, you know, or lead people to them, that's all good. You know what it is. Whatever it is, man, you just want to listen, that's cool. You want to participate, that's cool. You know, but I'm here, and I'm going to be here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. I'm going to be here. So anyway, other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media,
Once again, this program from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspectives, on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. On Mondays from 6 to 8, all times are going to give our Eastern times. On Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jihad Ahmed. And then from 8 to 9 on Mondays, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Cambon and her daughter, Nataki Cambon, Black Therapy Central. And then from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Tuesdays. And then on Thursdays, Melanin Live. Let me cross that out some more. Melanin Live with host Chief Lance Jones and Sister Bonisiwa Ayan. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's time for an awakening. That's right, brothers and sisters. Time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an awakening. And on Saturdays from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers from 4 to 6. And then from 7 to 9, at Sankofa Elders Council from 7 to 9. On Sunday from 7 to 9, time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses at WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bomani Tayemba, is on his way next week. Next week, he's going to Ghana, the December 24th to January 5th. Then he'll follow that up in April 2nd to the 12th, Senegal and Gambia. And then he's going to Ghana again, May 24th to June 4th. And then he's going to Tanzania. And that's going to be November 18th through the 29th. So I got to get myself together because I want to make that trip to Tanzania. Okay, November 18th through the 29th. All the fares at this time are still $3,700. Everything you need is on the website. Go to AfricaForTheAfricans.org, AfricaForTheAfricans.org, or give Brother Bomani a call at 404-931-9429. That's 404-931-9429, Africa for the Africans. Brother Renoko Rashidi, Baba Renoko, go to DrRenoko.com. DrRenoko.com. His trip for Uganda and Rwanda is October 5th through the 16th. October 5th through the 16th. And he has a trip in August 1st through the 14th. And that's going to Kemet. He's going to Kemet, going to Egypt, August 1st. And his is around $4,200. But please go to DrRenoko.com. And check out the website and the beautiful pictures that he has. You know, Baba always has a lot of nice pictures, doesn't he? He has physically documented the African presence around the world, and we thank him for that. Oh, also, too, if you want to give Baba Renoko a call, give him a call at 323-803-8663. That's 323-803-3663. Habashah, HabashahIncorporated.org. HabashahIncorporated.org. The brothers and sisters are doing the work. They definitely deserve to be supported. The programs and projects they have going on. Of course, the mission there, Pan-African organization that cultivates leadership in youth and families through practical experiences in culture education, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship, holistic health, and technology, the Sustainable Seeds Youth Program, the Golden Growers, all kinds of good stuff. Habashah Works, all these things are happening. And one other thing that's happening this big time, of course, is the Kashi Project. And the Kashi Project, you know, that's going on in Ghana. And the buildings are up. It's happening. That's HabashahIncorporated.org. Check them out. The Ledge Group, Land for Environmental Development of Group Economics, the LEDS Group, doing outstanding work in the areas of food, water, clothing, and shelter. Food, water, clothing, and shelter. They have 12 projects that are going on in six countries, employing about 172 people with over 260 members. Brothers and sisters, go online to theledgegroup.com. Also, too, to check them out, to Grand Rising on Facebook. Check that out, the Grand Rising on Facebook. The Ledge Group. Wadada's, Healthy Market and Juice Bar here in Atlanta, located here in the West End on Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard, located just up the street from the Shrine, east of the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Of course, the Shrine will be open today from 1 to 7, and tomorrow from 1 to 7. So you can get your Kwanzaa kits and candles and books and all kinds of good stuff that the Shrine has for you. All kinds of good stuff. The Shrine of the Black Madonna up the street from Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Mama Nia has a fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, T-shirts, certificates, all kinds of good stuff. Check her out. Give her a call at 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore, Brother Kazim Diajamu. He has his Kwanzaa happening on the 26th, the first day of Kwanzaa. That's next week Saturday. Yes, that's right. Next week Saturday, brothers and sisters, is Kwanzaa. And he's going to have a Kwanzaa program. And that's going to be at the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, 6984 Main Street. The number to call is 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. Us lifting us to economic development cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Cooperative economics, as we like to say, family-centered economics. Their Thursday night broadcast last night from 9 to 10. On Blog Talk Radio. That's right, Blog Talk Radio. Go to blogtalkradio.com/ULU. The name of the program is Dare to Win. That is us lifting us. If you want to call to listen, you can do that. Or call to make questions, comments, or concerns, you dial 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us lifting us. Sanjay-Haiti.org. Sister Gabby is doing an outstanding job of working with our young people and the people in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti. And, of course, as you know, in those rural areas, they don't get a lot of funding, but she's doing great work. So check her out. Go to Sanjay, Sonjay-Haiti, Haiti.org, and check out what she's doing in terms of educating our youth. The kids look beautiful in their uniforms. Health. They have a health, serious health component. And, of course, entrepreneur and sustainable agriculture. Just a great job. Sanjay-Haiti.org. Akabin Institute. Also, two brothers, you can go to AkabinHouse.com for the books that me and Baba Babruti were talking about. We were talking about on Wednesday's program, AkabinHouse.com, and you can check out many of the books that he has, and you can order them from that website, Akabin House. But Akabin Institute, of course, is the educational institution that they have here in Atlanta, and they need to be supported. And, of course, the Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. That's Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. Also, too, you can use PayPal and Cash App. The Cash App is $Yah, his wife's name, N-E-I, Baruti. So it's Yah, Y-A-A-M, Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I. And make your contributions to Akabin Institute. That's right. The Inye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Enye Sasim. So, I don't know if it was on the air when I mentioned that to Baba Barudi, but he is sending me a copy of the Enye Sasim 2. I don't know if I heard that on the air or not, but, you know, I look forward to it and get it before the year. So on J1, and we do have a program on January 1st, like we have a program on December 25th. So, you know, yeah, on those European holidays, I love to be on the air on those. I really do, you know. And, of course, even, of course, any celebration that we have, I'd love to broadcast on that day as well to highlight it and give good focus to it, you know. So that's why I'm really geared up for, even though, I mean, you know, the situation is what it is, and a lot of Kwanzaa will be virtual, but still it's something that we must celebrate in, because any time that we can come together, any time that we can bring our voices together and get an understanding, it's all good. It's a continuous step towards our independence, our self-determination, our liberation, and our sovereignty. And we must continue to make those steps. And this program promotes, and its motto is, Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die. December 17th, the man dies and all who keep silent in the face of tyranny. Wole Soyinka. The history of relationships between Africans and Europeans should tell us that questions of forgetting and forgiving do not deserve a momentary reflection. It is a lie that not forgiving guilty people gives them power over you. They will hold power over you only until you stop them from doing so. As long as they are allowed to dominate you, your forgiveness of them is worthless in preventing them from destroying you and all you represent. In fact, underserved forgiveness gives them even more freedom to act against you. In worlds of equals, forgiveness requires that the perpetrators, number one, collectively recognize and admit their crimes. This is in the world of equals. Number two, stop trying to draw comparisons between their crimes and those of their victims in an attempt to lessen the impact of what they did. Number three, are truly sorry for what they have done. Number four, have stopped in all ways doing whatever it is that they are seeking forgiveness for. And number five, have fully compensated their victims. And number five, have fully compensated their victims. That's why the European could give less than a rat's ass about us and our calls for retribution, our calls for compensation, our calls for reparations. Stop it, y'all. But to not demand reparations for the suffering of our ancestors and the continuing suffering of our people, it's a pathological denial of reality and history. We must, and they will. Forgetting, of course, is even more nonsensical, because forgetting, like forgiving, leaves one open to repeated assaults by the same people in the same way. Even worse, if you forget how you got to where you are now, you will not be able to find your way home. And even if we rediscover our roots but do not understand what tore us from them, we can easily be ripped from them again and again, each time becoming more distant from the possibilities of a complete and final return home. Affirm, I forgive enemies only for good reason, but I never forget. Affirm, I forgive enemies for only good reason, but I never forget. December 18th. Speak the truth to the people. To identify the enemy is to free the mind. Free the mind of the people. To speak to the mind of the people. Speak truth. Poetess Mari Evans. No matter how economically or socially distanced the European elite are from the dispossessed Caucasian masses, they are one. They are one. And these elections should tell us that. We should look at these elections. They should tell us that because they consistently show us that. The European elite still share a joint supremacist, exploitive, dominative nationalist agenda with the European masses. They form one geno-cultural nation. Europeans who have the Caucasian masses as their constituency cannot truly risk alienating them in a game of racial politics, because if they know nothing else, they know that in a political economic system grounded in European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, where did I leave myself off at? No, grounded in European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, the European masses' loyalty is first and foremost to their Caucasianness, their Europeanness, their whiteness. Unless the European elite can make the non-European masses equally blindly loyal to them, they cannot take the chance of blatantly forsaking their own for others. This is especially true if those causes undermine the European masses' survival. They are of the same mind, is most evident in the fact that any dispossessed European would gladly assume the position vacated by a dead or dismissed elite without skipping a damn racist beat. Whether dispossessed or elite, race precedes class in the mind of the European. Let me repeat that. Whether dispossessed or elite, race, culture, their culture, supersedes class in the European mind. The imposition of European culture, the dominance of European culture. Class antagonisms do not negate nationalism bound by culture, European culture. Of this, we should remain cognizant, no matter how doggedly radical Marxist and liberal Europeans work to convince us that we're in the same class with them. Stop it. I speak to the mind of my people. December 19th. The one who is nearest the enemy in pursuit is the real leader. Ganda proverb. Often it is difficult to tell the real from fake among the voices clamoring to speak for us. Those infected with Negroitis or psychological sickness within African context, a burning desire to mimic Europeans and obliterate all that is African within them, involuntarily applaud the likes of Henry Louis Gates, Cornel West, Tavis Smiley, and Michael Eric Dyson as the foremost and most visible African intellectuals, even never having read or thought about the implications of what these elite Negroes have said. All they need to know is that they totally advocate sub-integrationist, integrationist agendas. They know that Europeans approve of them as evident in the privilege awarded to them, which is ample evidence of their misleadership. I said that, misleadership. However, for those who have learned to rely on our intuition and the knowledge we have already acquired from the works and lectures of serious African-centered thinkers, those who truly speak for us are easy to identify. For knowing is not a difficult task. Nonetheless, to those in search of our true intellectual leadership, most often one of the best indicators of whether an African scholar is or is not in our corner is the degree to which he or she is under attack. That's why I always say, if Caucasians like them, promote them, it's an issue. But if Caucasians don't like them, I love them. Nevertheless, to those in search of our true intellectual leadership, most often one of the best indicators of whether an African scholar is or is not in the corner is the degree to which he or she is under attack, sacrifices all to remain in that battle, and has to struggle against Europeans and Negroes to speak our truth. Ashe. Affirm, I am nearest the enemy in pursuit. Affirm, I am nearest the enemy in pursuit. Brothers and sisters, the Inye Sesem of daily revolutionary thought. Your philosophy determines your thought pattern. Your thought pattern determines your attitude. Your attitude determines your behavior pattern, and your behavior pattern determines your actions. It begins with what you think, and it ends because of what you think, what you do. So if you think that our sisters ain't nothing but B's and H's and everything else that's negative, how will you treat them? Exactly. If you think our brothers should not be supported and not worthy of support, then you will treat them as such. It begins with what you think and it ends with what you do. So if you think that sisters are to be protected and respected and cared and loved, you will treat them with respect and care and love. If you think that brothers ought to be supported and nurturing, you will treat them with support and nurturing and love. It begins with what you think and it ends with what you do. What you do for yourself depends upon what you think of yourself. And what you think of yourself depends upon what you know of yourself. And what you know of yourself depends upon what you have been told. The bottom line is, who told you? Who's doing the telling? Who are you listening to? Who are you reading? Who are you watching? What you have been told. So what you do for yourself depends upon what you think of yourself. And what you think of yourself depends upon what you know of yourself. And what you know of yourself depends upon what you have been told. That's why it's adamant. That's why it's critical that you know who's doing the telling. That's why I rely on our scholars and our historians. That's why I look at, is that where I'm getting this, is it African-centered? Is it somebody who has stood the test of time, struggling for our people, those ancestors who you may read, the contemporaries who you may read? What we have been told, and you know what we have been told. You know what we have been told. That's why today is the birthday, the 74th birthday of Bantu Stephen Biko. We're going to pay tribute to Brother Biko, because you know I always use the quote, the ending of this program, the quote of, the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This is a war. We're at war for the minds of our people. And I try my best to be a part of putting into the minds of our people who we are, what we're about, and what we must do. This is a protracted struggle for the minds of our people. We must not be the people who walked but left no footprints, who talked but had nothing meaningful to say, who labored but built nothing for themselves. And so, we lay at your feet the builder's spade and shovel, the mason's trowel and square, Africa's books of wisdom. Now go and build for eternity. Brother Lester Velt Middleton. Once again, you can hear Brother Lester Velt Middleton and all the other scholars and ancestors. And he's an ancestor, but he had some interviews with some of our great warrior scholars of John G. Jackson, Ivan von Sertima, Chancellor Williams, John Henry Clark, Dr. Ben, you name it, he had them. So check him out. Check him out. Yep, we're going to talk about Brother Stephen Biko today. He was born on this day in 1946. And Brother Stephen Biko, you know, I didn't learn about Stephen Biko until Cry Freedom came out, the movie Cry Freedom came out with Denzel Washington. Once again, an outstanding job. You know, see, what you always got to understand when you know, don't get frustrated when somebody gets an Academy Award for a part that they've done and you be seeing yourself, damn, he played or she played some really good parts and they give her an award for that part? Like, damn, you know, like Training Day, a despicable rogue cop, you know, they gave him an award. He did get an award for Glory. Yeah. But he's played some good roles. Even when he played Reuben Hurricane Carter, you know. And then, of course, Halle Berry, you know, she got an award for playing the role of, you know, of a woman who has sex with her husband was Puff Daddy or P. Diddy, whatever, Sean Diddy Combs, her husband who was going to be executed, you know. But see, that's the thing, dear brothers and sisters. This is theirs, not ours. And they choose to give an award, whoever they want to give an award to, for whatever reason. And for us, don't bother yourself trying to figure it out. Stay on the path of liberation. Stay on the path of self-determination. Stay on the path of self-determination and sovereignty. So when you're on that path, you ain't worried about all the other stuff, okay? You ain't even worried about it. Stephen Biko was born on this day in 1946. He would have been 74 today. And he was an activist, ideologically an African nationalist and African socialist. He was at the forefront of a grassroots anti-apartheid campaign known as Black Consciousness, the Black Consciousness Movement. Because as he was looking at the struggles in South Africa, he was noting that the Caucasian liberals, you know, were always undermining and doing things to deal with suppressing the legitimate claims for African independence. And what Stephen Biko, like other Africans, were looking at was being a part of the society equally. You know, that's what he was looking at. You know, during the 60s and 70s, his ideas were articulated in a series of articles under the pseudonym Frank Talk, raised in a poor section in South Africa, southern part of South Africa. In 1966, he began studying medicine at the University of Natal, where he joined National Union of South African Students. Strongly opposed to the apartheid system, the racial segregation and Caucasian minority rule, Biko was frustrated. And like I said, these groups, they were weak, you know. They were weak. And that's why he went on to form other groups, because he understood that these groups, a lot of them were controlled. And just like Baba Baruti said the other day, a lot of groups that we have, even though they may have African in the name or Black in the name, a lot of them are funded by corporate America or independent philanthropists, donors. And of course, you know, if you're funded by them, and then you're beholden to them. They don't give you money just to say, hey, you know, here you go for your money for your liberation. No. You know, they give you money and say, hey, you continue to fight for integration. You continue to fight for inclusion. You continue to. That's why even in this election, you'll see, because it's been happening from elections eternally. Yes, I want the Democratic Party to have the control of the Senate. I don't have any illusions that anything fundamentally will be done, whether they have the control or not. I'm just being real. Because if they don't get it, I ain't gonna be like, damn, you know, they don't get it, they don't get it. But we know that if they don't get it, it'll be a lot of obstruction, just like the last 6 years of Barack. But even at that, you know, even at that, Barack was capitulating, acquiescing to the so-called powers that be. You know, many people, particularly in Michigan, will say when he came and drank that water as a show, instead of coming there saying, hey, listen, I'm going to bring the Army Corps of Engineers down here. I'm going to put the full force of the United States government into cleaning up this and looking at other cities where this is a serious problem, this infrastructural problem, and put the money behind that, asking for public and private contributions to making this happen. And still, damn it, today, the water is not clean. Today. Because it's us. Because it's us. So, you know, no, I have no illusions about any political party, be it Democrat, Republican, or any independent, in this system, doing anything righteously, honestly, equitably, fairly, justly for African people. You know, it hasn't happened. It ain't happening. And damn it, it ain't going to happen. But I know we hold out hope. Keep hope alive. You know, keep praying. You know, keep hoping, keep wishing. So, Biko was doing the same thing. He was hoping and praying and working with liberal groups and so forth, but realizing that that's not going to happen. You know, it's not going to happen. I'm got a couple of pieces on my plate. One, of course, is From Cry Freedom. Is a part of the movie, the court scene, where Denzel Washington playing Stephen Biko, and they're trying to jam him up, you know. They're trying to jam the brother up. Yeah, the European, the Caucasoid. That's Mama Jackie, the Caucasoid. I'm going to play this one piece here, and then this is like I said, about three pieces I think I'm going to try to play, get an understanding, and part of it you'll hear Stephen Biko speaking, you know. So here we go.
It is better to die for an idea that will live than to live for an idea that will die.
Steve Biko was laid to rest in the simplest of fashions, his coffin carried by donkey cart, in September 1977. His funeral was attended by 20,000 people, including diplomats from 13 countries, his close friend Donald Woods, and members of opposition parties. More could have packed in had security police not set up a cordon around the town. Biko's short life of just 31 years was packed with political activism. There had been deaths in detention before, but the country and world were shocked that someone with a statue of Biko could have died in this fashion. He'd been returning from a trip to Cape Town when he was arrested outside King Williamstown. His banning order had confined him to the town. The apartheid government viewed him as a threat, as he had been involved in NUSAS as a student, SASO, the Black People's Convention, and the organization most identified with him, the Black Consciousness Movement.
Black consciousness is an attitude of the mind and a way of life. The most positive call to emanate from the black world for a long time. Its essence is the realization by the black man of the need to rally together with his brothers around the cause of their oppression, the blackness of their skin, and to operate as a group to rid themselves of the shackles that bind them to perpetuate servitude.
His message of black pride resonated with both South Africa's oppressed and others worldwide. But state brutality grew alongside this message. Biko was taken to Warma Police Station in Port Elizabeth and then to the notorious security police officers in the Sanlam building. The PE police were apparently determined not to show Biko the respect they believe he enjoyed from King Williamstown Police. Despite an inquest and later testimony by officers at the TRC, there's never been clarity on what happened on the night of September the 6th. Biko was examined by doctors. One said he was shamming. Another recommended he receive medical treatment, but later allowed him to be transferred to Pretoria, naked and manacled in the back of a van. The official version of his death was that he had died of hunger. His death on this day leaving the then Minister of Police, Jimmy Kruger, to say it left him cold.
I'm going to be me as I am, and you can beat me or jail me or even kill me, but I'm not going to be what you want me to be.
Stephen Biko, I'm not going to be who you want me to be. That's the defiance that we as African people must have in the face of this oppression and the constant oppression, and not to just give in to it or to acquiesce or capitulate to it, but be defiant, be serious. It is the only way that we must be. Everything that we do must be an instrument for our liberation, our self-determination, our sovereignty. You know, he was considered the father of the Black Consciousness Movement. And although he mentioned that Europeans, the liberals and so forth, he kind of got, you know, off from them. And he was thinking more so of a coalition with the coloreds and, of course, the Indians. You know, the coloreds were considered those who were mulattoes, like a, you know, Trevor Noah, you know. And, of course, the Indians in South Africa, which, of course, Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi was there for a long time until he went back to India. And, of course, while he was there, he took the side and the mindset of Europeans, you know. And he were along with them, calling us Kaffirs and disrespecting us and so forth in our land, you know. And, of course, in India, if you know that country, the darker you are, the more you're despised. The darker you are, the more you're shunned. The darker you are, the lower you are on the economic ladder. In fact, one could argue the dynamics of colorism, of color confrontation, the dynamics of racism could have started in India when the Aryans moved into India and replaced the Dravidians in India. In fact, I never forget when Worf D. Muhammad took over after the death of Elijah Muhammad. He put a book out. I have that book. It's one day, brothers and sisters, I'm going to take these books and stuff I have in the basement and put them on a shelf. I got them in bins. I believe I'd have that book. I should. And there is a section in that book. It's the new teachings after Worf D. Muhammad took over of the Nation of Islam and, of course, was moving it to Orthodox Islam. But there's a chapter in that book, and the title is "The Roots of Aryan White Racism and Diabolical Consciousness." You know, that title just—I mean—it's stuck with me all these years. You know,
and I think that in the 90s, might have been in the 80s when I had that. The roots of Aryan white racism and diabolical consciousness, how they could not defeat the Dravidians militarily. So what do they believe? What is on their mind? So they implemented this idea of the Hinduism, the Brahman, and the lighter you are, the better you are, and so forth. And of course, that developed the caste system, and look at India today, particularly the dark-skinned people. And so what Stephen Biegel was saying is that, no, the darker you are, the black you are, the better. There is no difference. But of course, the bottom line that there is, particularly in societies run by people who have that mindset, who have that color confrontation mindset, it is. There definitely is a difference. If you want to join this conversation, we're talking today about Stephen Biko. Today is the birth of Stephen Biko, December 18th. And like I said, I end this program with that quote, and I always will, because it's just a dynamic quote. And of course, he loved Franz Fanon. And of course, I'll use Franz Fanon quote on cognitive dissonance, you know. And it was other people that Brother Stephen Biko read, but they, based upon the information I've seen, particularly in Wikipedia, said that he was very fond of the author Franz Fanon and the struggles that he was having in Algeria and also in Namibia or Angola. So we're going to take a break in a minute, and when we come back from that break, if you want to give us a call and join the conversation at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. And so we can have more knowledge and get more insight into the history and the legacy of Stephen Biko and how important he is. Like I say, a lot of people don't know about Stephen Biko. You know, some people have never heard of him. Honestly, I didn't know about him until the movie came out in the 80s. You know, the Cry Freedom movie came out in the 80s. You know, and some of those movies on South Africa are really deep. You know. Yeah. I remember one particularly, See, that's why I got to take me some, because that can help me remember. It'll come to me, I know. It's the one where at the beginning of the movie, the young man, he runs into the beer garden, and he sees his brothers and sisters, his friends, and he sees his people in the beer garden just getting drunk. And they ain't drinking a bottle of beer. Dry white season. I told you. Dry white season. He ain't drinking a bottle of beer. He ain't drinking a glass of beer, a stein, a mug. He drinking pails. They just gulping it down. He sees that's what the white man wants you to do. He wants you to drink so you're not going to fight for your freedom. Dry white season. That's right. Intoxicate you. Put you on drugs. Mess up your mind while they continue to rape you and rape your land and take your resources and mess up your damn mind. Yeah, there's a number of those movies from South Africa that are deep. And for me, they all have the paternalistic liberal Caucasian who's a nice person. You know, just like here in this movie, I think his name is Woods. He was, he had befriended. In fact, he left South Africa and he wrote a book on Stephen Biko, a number of other things, you know. And I ain't saying, but let me just say this, that there are Caucasians. Some people have no Caucasian friends. I've had some. I mean, I was on the fire department, You know, one cat that I even coached football with for 30-some years, you know. In fact, I was talking to one of our people that we know jointly. He was a little upset because he said he voted for Trump. It didn't surprise me. But we had worked together 31 years, put money together to have a football program for our kids. And since I was the lead person, I was the head coach. In fact, the last few years, our team was called the Panthers. And our colors were red, black, and green. That's right. Red, black, and green uniform. I ain't playing. You know, but I remember something that, once again, referring to Imam Morf D. Muhammad. He's talking about in Islam, you can have Christians as your friends, but you cannot have them as your protecting friends. You cannot have them as somebody who that you know should be in the house. You can be a friend. We cool. But not so that I must rely on you as a protecting friend. And I knew that, you know. I knew that from the beginning. I've known those things in the last 30-some, maybe 40 years of my life. You know, 30-some for sure. So we're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk more about Bantu, Stephen Biko. Bantu means friend. You know, Bantu means friend. We're going to, talk about Stephen Biko and his life. And I'm going to try to get this together. No, I'm sorry. Bantu means people. I apologize. Bantu means people. I know, brothers and sisters, sometimes I be like that. But I'm going to get it together. You know that. All right. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You stay with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Celebration, Karamu at back home. Yo, it's all right. It's a celebration that will last throughout the year. Happy Kwanzaa. All right. Happy Kwanzaa. Everybody. Happy Kwanzaa. Together there is so much we can do. Happy, 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 happy Kwanzaa. So many ways to show I love you. See, I have faith in all that we do. But we gotta stay together. Just a few of the principles.
That's when we get praise to the man upstairs for another blessed day. I give hugs to my moms, my dad, and my sis. You smell that? I run to see what moms cook.
While we drink from the cup of togetherness, it's that part of the year that you don't want to miss. I give a gift from the heart so you know it's true. So recite a principle and tell me what it means to you.
Creativity.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Once again, brothers and sisters, welcome back to African Perspectives. That was Teddy Pendergrass, Happy Kwanzaa. And as we get ready for the Kwanzaa season and many of the programs that are going to be happening, around the city and your city, and some might even be happening nationally, you know. We can, because of the ability to Zoom, we can have some great Kwanzaa programs, you know, that can be put together. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to it, you know, as a celebration for us developing consciousness and awareness and a connectedness of who we are as African people. And this, to me, is vitally important. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And on Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, Public Affairs Programming with Brother Wahad Ahmed, followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and her daughter, Nataki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversation, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Thursdays from 7 to 9, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Bonisiwa Ayan. And then on Fridays, if it's 8 p.m. on Friday. Is today Friday? Today is Friday. Well, 8 p.m. today, it's going to be time for an awakening. That's right. With Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. That's tonight. On Saturdays, from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council from 7 to 9. on Sundays from 7 to 9. Time for an awakening. Once again, with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We're talking today about Stephen Biko, a brother who a lot of us don't know about, and we should know about. We should know about those men and women who made the sacrifices. Now, he's had a wife and he had five kids, and he initially was studying to be a doctor, but got into activism, and, you know, you don't get rich being an activist, that's for damn sure, you know, especially if you're really going hard against a particular system. You know, the only people that will help you out are those who are closest to you or who understand and support the cause. You know, that's why, to me, there's some things that I would definitely support, you know, and give money to, you know, and time to, because a lot of other stuff, I mean, hey, you know, they ain't with that. I don't believe in supporting something that would not get the kind of results that I hope that would be. And the results that I want is independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. So if it's not promoting that, if it's not pushing that, if that's not the goal, you know. So if I came to some big money, would I support UNCF? Would I support NACP? Would I support Urban League? No. And if I did, if I had that kind of money, I would say some demands. I'm going to change your name. You know, I'd say to the fraternities and sororities, change your names. Nothing to change. Yeah, change your names. And if you want to brand on something, brand on an ankh. You know, brand on, you know, the Medu Netcher, instead of branding on Greek symbols, which would plagiarize from us to begin with. So that's, once again, as the saying goes, for me, oh, that's just me. Yeah. Founding in 1968 in Johannesburg, many of its members, and that was the INYUSA, which is a youth group, student group. And many of its members attended a 1968 conference at the University of Christian Movements at Sutherland. There, the African members decided to hold a December conference to discuss the formation of an independent black study group, the South African Student Organization. And so that's the organization that Stephen Biko utilized most. The others group, no. Which officially launched in July of 69 with a conference of the North there. The group's constitution and basic policy platforms were adopted. The group's focus was on the need to contact between centuries of black students, activists, including those through sports, cultural activities, and debating competitions. Though Biko played a substantial role in the formation and creation, he sought a low public profile during the early stages, believing that this would strengthen his second level of leadership, such as his leading. Nonetheless, he was elected as SASO, South African Student Organization's first president. And Biko developed this ideology of black consciousness in a conversation with other African students. SASO policy manifesto produced in July of 71 defined the ideology as an attitude of the mind, a way of life. The basic tenets of black consciousness is that the black man must reject all value systems that seek to make him a foreigner in the country of his birth and reduce his basic human dignity. Black consciousness centered on the psychological empowerment through combating the feelings of inferiority that most Africans, black South Africans, exhibited. Biko believed that part of the struggle against apartheid and Caucasian minority rule, blacks should affirm their own humanity by regarding themselves as worthy of freedom, and it is attained in its attainment and its attained responsibilities. It applied the term black not only to Bantu-speaking Africans, but also to Indians and colors. That's the part that I remember reading. But of course, they were regarded as that and treated as such. And of course, you, as we know, many times the Europeans would use coloreds and people outside of it as a buffer, just like they've done everywhere else, like they do here, the mulattoes in the Haitian Revolution, as a buffer between the legitimate aspirations and wills of the people against the Caucasians who wants to maintain dominance and control. So he adopted this term over non-white because its leadership felt that defining themselves in opposition to white people was not a positive self-description. Biko promoted the slogan, "Black is beautiful," explaining that it meant, "Man, you are okay as you are. Begin to look upon yourself as a human being." Biko presented a paper on white racism and black consciousness at the academic conference in the University of Cape Town in January 71. He also expanded on his idea in a column written for the South African Student Organization newsletter under the pseudonym Frank Talk. His tenure as the president was taken up largely by fundraising activities and involved traveling around various campuses in South Africa to recruit students and deepen the movement's ideological base. Some of these students censored him for abandoning the former multiracial approach. Others disapproved of his group's decision to allow Indians and colored students to be members. Biko stepped down from the presidency after years, insisting that it was not necessary for new leadership to emerge and thus avoid any cult of personalities forming around him. I can understand that. But once you're a strong leader, those things will happen. And, of course, then the attitude of liberalism and personal relationships, black consciousness activities, and, of course, the banning of Stephen Biko. Strong man, strong brother. You know, I'm going to play this for you. This is Stephen Biko. Played by Denzel Washington in the movie Cry Freedom. This is the court scene. This is the court scene.
I quote, "I believe that South Africa is a country in which black and white shall live together." Those are your words. What does it mean?
It means that I, and those gentlemen in the dock, believe that South Africa is a plural society, with contributions to be made by all segments of the community.
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with the language in some of these documents the accused have discussed with black groups?
Yes, since some of those documents were drawn up by me.
The one noting with concern and disgust the naked terrorism of the government?
That is correct.
You say naked terrorism. Do you honestly think that is a valid statement?
Well, I think it is a far more valid statement than the charges against these men here.
Really?
Yes, really. I am not talking about words. I am talking about the violence in which people are baton charged by police, beaten up. I'm talking about police firing on unarmed people. I'm talking about the indirect violence you get through starvation in the townships. I'm talking about the hopelessness, the desolation of the transit camps. Now, I think that, all put together, that constitutes more terrorism than the words these men have spoken here, but they stand charged. And white society is not charged.
When you and others in black consciousness speak, you say, Our true leaders have been banned and imprisoned on Robben Island.
Who are you referring to specifically? Specifically, we refer to people like Mandela, Sobukwe, to people like Govan Mbeki.
And is it not true that the common factor with these people is that they have advocated violence against the South African government?
The common factor with these people is that they have selflessly pushed forward the struggle of the black man.
So, your answer to this so-called naked terrorism is to provoke violence in the black community.
No, our movement seeks to avoid violence.
But your own words call for direct confrontation.
That's right. We demand confrontation.
Isn't that a demand for violence?
Well, you and I are now in confrontation, but I see no violence.
But nowhere in these documents do you say that the white government is doing anything good.
Well, it does so little good, my lord, that it is not worth commenting on.
But surely that approach inflames racial hatred and anti-whiteism.
My lord, blacks are not unaware of the hardships they endure or what the government is doing to them. We want them to stop accepting these hardships, to confront them. People must not just give in to the hardships of life. They must find a way, even in this environment, to develop hope. Hope for themselves, hope for this country. Now, I think that is what black consciousness is all about. Now, without any reference to the white man, to try and build up a sense of our own humanity, our legitimate place in the world.
But why do you use a phrase like black is beautiful?
Because black is commonly associated with negatives. The black market, the black sheep of the family, anything which is supposed to be bad.
Then why do you use the word? Why call yourselves black? I mean, you people are more brown than black.
Why do you call yourselves white? You people are more pink than white.
Precisely.
Yeah. And that's... That was Denzel Washington in Cry Freedom, portraying Stephen Biko. I like that court scene. Here's a quote from Brother Stephen Biko. Like black power in the United States, South African black consciousness movement was grounded in the belief that African descended people had to overcome the enormous psychological and cultural damage imposed on them by the succession of Caucasian or white racist dominance, such as enslavement and colonization and colonialism. Drawing upon the writings and speeches of Frantz Fanon, Malcolm X, advocates of black consciousness supported cultural and social activities that promoted a knowledge of black protest history. They actively promoted the establishment of independent black-owned institutions and favored radical reforms within school curriculum that nurtured a positive black identity for black young people. You know, and I think we were talking about that with Baba Baruti on Wednesday. And mentioned this many times on the program, how important it is for education at an early age to be the foundation of our people. I would venture to say that it's more important
at that level than high school or secondary school or college, university, trade, whatever. The educational foundation at the very beginning being African-centered, rooting and grounding those students in the knowledge of self from kindergarten all the way to, I would say, sixth, seventh, eighth grade. And then from that particular point, or maybe before high school, so all the way up into that high school. So when you go to high school, wherever high school you go to, you know, you ain't worried about what's happening there because you're not there to be liked. You're not there to join a group, a fraternity, a sorority. You're not there. What you're there for is to get everything that school has to offer to be a help, to be a liberation for our people. You're not there so you can ascend to the top positions. You're there so you have an understanding of being a part of a collective, part of a organization of brothers and sisters who are gaining, inquiring knowledge of self for the betterment of our people. That's why you're there. That's why, to me, it's because, see, that's not happening in the American educational system. Promotes individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. That's what America's about. So you're not going to get that in the public school system, in the private school system, parochial schools, charter or choice. You're not going to get that. You only get that in African-centered education, and it must be done at the earliest of ages and the earliest of grades. It's important. No. So here's another quote. My major problem at this moment is a strange kind of guilt. So many friends of mine have been arrested for activities and something that I most instrumental in starting. A lot of them are blokes I spoke into movements and got them, and I am not with them. One does not think this way in political life, of course. Casualties are expected and should be bargained for, and that's just part of the struggle. You know, it's just a part of the struggle that it happens. There's a couple of other quotes in here that I wanted to bring up. And this is from, this is Stephen Biko, but this is Woods' book. This is Woods' book. So, black consciousness directs itself to the black man and to his situation. And the black man is subject to two forces in this country. He is, first of all, oppressed by an external world through institutionalized machinery and through laws that restrict him from doing certain things, through heavy work conditions, through poor pay, through difficult living conditions, through poor education. These are the external to him. Secondly, and this we regard as the most important, the black man in himself has developed a certain state of alienation. He rejects himself precisely because he attracts the meaning white to all that is good. He attaches the meaning to white to all that is good. In other words, he equates good with being white. This arises out of his development from childhood. It starts from the beginning. So if it starts from the beginning of putting that into the mind of our people, then it suffices to say that it should start from the very beginning of making sure that we don't have that into our minds, that we eradicate that mentality, that ideology, that philosophy, that education of putting into our minds an inferiority. Just like Franz Fanon, cognitive dissonance. Europeans believe that they're inferior. And there's nothing that we as African people can do or say to correct that. That is their mindset. That is their belief. And cognitive dissonance says to them that nothing fits that. I reject that. If you're saying something contrary to that, that what my belief in my superiority, no, I ain't going with that. I don't give a damn how much proof, how much evidence. I'm going with what I want to bring. And that is me being in control and in dominance of everything, of being superior. Well, it works the same way, brothers and sisters. We believe because we have been indoctrinated, inculcated for so long that we believe we are inferior. We believe in our inability to come together, to trust one another, to believe in one another, to work with one another, to respect one another. We believe in our inferiority. We have been trained. Just like Dr. Wade Nobles, if you ever heard him do his piece on the sheepdog, how they train a sheepdog. How they train a sheepdog, and you know, that they get that sheepdog away from all the other dogs. And they train the sheepdog to care for and protect the sheep. And that's what they've done to us. It's a training. It is a training. And it's ongoing. And because we're in this environment, this is what happens. That's why, you know, that's why it's hard to reach our youth. That's when you look at what's going on. It's hard. You know, Kwanzaa's been in now, 54 years. 54 years. And those principles are supposed to be instilled in our everyday lives. And we recognize and understand that they are not. We are no closer to Kujichagulia, self-determination, than we were 54 years ago. Our collective work and responsibility, our cooperative economics, our Ujamaa is pathetic. We don't understand our Nia, our purpose. Many of us have a faith in a system that has been imposed upon us as opposed to a faith in ourselves and each other. Our creativity has been co-opted. The beautiful creativity of us as African people is in control by those who have imposed their will on us. And of course, we go after them in the things that we do in our athletics. I don't know about you, but, you know, okay, like I mentioned earlier, I was a football coach for many years, over 30 years, and love sports. I boxed as a young man. I played football. I played basketball. I refereed basketball almost as long as I coached football. And I coached some basketball as well, girls as well as young men, you know. I understand and recognize sports, but I know the manipulation of professional sports particularly, but even college. I hate, and I, you know, it's a strong word, but believe me, I hate with a passion the National Collegiate Athletic Association, the NCAA. I hate it with a passion. They're playing football, they're playing basketball because the sponsorship and people getting paid. And none of the athletes get paid. They don't get paid. And as a consequence, they risk They're risking their lives. And they have done it even before this pandemic with injuries and so forth. While Caucasian, this is like Clemson's coach, Dabo Swinney. I hate that dude with a passion. I ain't lying. I'm just so bold enough. If I ever see that mug, I would F you. F you. Seen him on a piece talking about how corrupt the NCAA is, and you know, and these young people should get some kind of compensation. They should get paid. And he was adamant. He was demonstrative. No, they shouldn't get paid. That's when, if they get paid, that's when I go. And this man is making millions. Coaches in the, that's why some of the coaches don't want a coach in the professional leagues, because it's too great in college. You don't have to deal with professional athletes who making as much or making more than the coach. Because the kids, the young people in college don't make a damn thing. Don't make nothing. I'm from Milwaukee, and I remember, never forget, that Al McGuire, who used to coach the Marquette, now they're called the Golden Eagles, then they were called the Warriors. And they won the national championship in 77, but prior to that, in the 60s, Dean Memminger, who he got from New York, he would get players from, he had that kind of pipeline, because number one, he was from out east. But anyway, Al McGuire, I'll never forget this. He said, see that driveway? Dean Memminger helped pave that driveway. What he was saying is that because of these players, I'm making money. He wasn't advocating that they should make money or they should get a stipend or they should get some kind of compensation. No, but he was saying that because of them, I'm making money. Dabo Swinney, that punk, he makes $7 million a year. He has multiple streams of revenue. He has a radio program, a television program, advertisement, and the companies that Reebok, Nike, I don't know who it is for him. But they pay him a sizable sum for his players that they must wear. He gets the money. So you can see my deep disdain. And this all boils down to what we are talking about, you know, in terms of everybody makes this money. Everybody has all this off of us. That's why, to me, it's important that we establish these educational institutions at an early age, at an age where we can control the minds of our children, that they'll be in our care, and these children will understand who they are. And so as they go into high school, they ain't to worry about them. They know who they are, and they stay closely connected to one another. Because what they are there for, they ain't there to make friends. They're there to get everything that school has to offer to help us in the liberation struggle for our people. Bottom line, whether it's high school or college, trade school, university, everything is in that service. Stephen Biko said, it becomes necessary to see the truth as it is if you realize that the only vehicle for change are these people who have lost their personality. The first step, therefore, is to make the black man come to himself, to pump back life into the empty shell, to infuse him with pride and dignity, to remind him of his complicity in crime of allowing himself to be miseducated and misused, and therefore letting an evil reign supreme in the land of his birth, letting an evil reign supreme in the land of his birth. That is what we mean by an inward looking process. That is the definition of black consciousness. That is the definition of black consciousness. Stephen Biko. Black, said Biko, is not a color. Black is an experience. If you are oppressed, you are black. In South African context, this was truly revolutionary. Biko's subsidiary message was that the unity of the oppressed could not be achieved through clandestine armed struggle. It had to be achieved in the open, fought, and peaceful but militant struggle. It has to be understood. It has to be realized. Anybody wants to join in this conversation? If you're on, I see a number of people on, hit the pound sign, and that will let me know that you want to join this conversation. 215-490-9832. Anything else you want to talk about? Let me play another piece that I want to play here. And what you're going to hear is the voice of Stephen Biko in this particular piece here. So there's another small piece. Yeah.
Hello and welcome to History Pod. On the 12th of September 1977, South African anti-apartheid activist Steve Biko died in Pretoria prison from injuries inflicted while in police custody. Bantu Stephen Biko established the South African Students' Organization and subsequently developed the ideology of black consciousness to challenge the apartheid system of racial segregation and white minority rule. Having voted in favour of the Black People's Convention in 1972, by 1973, Biko's activities had caught the attention of the authorities. The government were concerned that the black consciousness movement and Biko himself were a threat to the political situation in South Africa. In response, a banning order was placed on him and a number of other anti-apartheid activists. Despite the banning order severely restricting his activities by banning him from leaving King William's Town, Biko continued to be involved in the anti-apartheid movement and was arrested and held without charge four times between 1975 and 1977. However, on the 17th of August 1977, he actively broke the terms of his banning order by driving to Cape Town in the hope of meeting with the leader of the Unity Movement, Neville Alexander. On his return the next day, Biko was stopped at a police roadblock and taken into custody. While held in Port Elizabeth, Biko was interrogated while shackled, handcuffed, and naked. Although the exact details of the interrogation have never been truly established, it's since been acknowledged that Biko was violently assaulted to such an extent that he suffered brain injuries that led to a hemorrhage. Having been sent more than 1,000 kilometres to Pretoria for medical treatment, on the 12th of September, Biko died in his cell of what the autopsy referred to as an extensive brain injury. His death attracted global attention and intensified international criticism of apartheid and the South African government.
You know, and they wanted to say that he died of a brain injury, you know. And the fact of the matter is he did not die of a brain injury. He died because he was beaten. He was severely beaten. That's why he died. You know, so, yeah. You know, that's deep, isn't it? That's deep. Let me see if I can find that. Here is Stephen Biko's own words.
We see a completely non-racial society. We don't believe, for instance, in the so-called guarantees for minority rights, because guaranteeing minority rights implies the recognition of portions of the community on a race basis. We believe that in our country there shall be no minority, there shall be no majority, there shall just be people. And those people will have the same status before the law, and they will have the same political rights before the law. So in a sense, it will be a completely non-racial egalitarian society.
But will the vast number of blacks, after all their experiences, be able to live their life without giving vent to feelings of revenge, of...
We believe it is the duty of the vanguard political movement which brings about change to educate people's outlooks. I mean, in the same way that blacks have never lived in a socialist economic system, they're going to live to learn to live in one. In the same way that they've always lived in a racially divided society, they're going to learn to live in a non-racial society. They've got many things to learn, and all these must be brought to them and explained to the people by the vanguard movement, which is leading the revolution.
Ashe, Stephen Biko. We got some callers. Let me take a call. 414-507, 414-507. Do you have a comment, question, or concern, or you're just listening?
I'm just listening, Brother Oshie.
I'm glad you are, Brother Ruru. I'm glad you are, brother.
Well, let me say this. Every time I think about them and us, I think about that saying, it's like a jungle sometimes.
Yeah. It makes me wonder.
It is a jungle.
Yeah.
And if we study the plants and the mammals, the lions, the tigers, all that, they're not singing Kumbaya. You know what I'm saying? Can we all just get along? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're right.
The lions is looking out for the lions. The hyenas is looking out for the hyenas. Now, they live together in a jungle, and they have a relationship with each other in the jungle, but it's still, it's the lions live according to how lions live. They don't try to be like hyenas, et cetera. And so I think there's a lesson in that we can learn.
Yeah. I agree. I say. All right.
Okay. All right, sir.
All right, my brother. Thank you, Brother Ruru. 336-336. Are you just listening? You got any comment or question or concern? 336.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead, please.
Greetings, my beautiful brother.
Oh, yeah. I am honored. I'm smiling from ear to ear over here. I am. How you doing, sister? This is Sister Benicia Wayan of Melanin Live, a program on Thursday nights, last night, Melanin Live. And so she is gracing us at this time. And so go ahead, my sister, go ahead.
Oh, no, it's my blessing, my privilege. I actually, you know me and my time, my schedule.
Right.
So I actually have about 20 minutes or so. I said, ooh, I can grab Oshie's program real quick before he goes off. So I was listening and just your fire and your revolutionary spirit, brother, that's why I love you.
I appreciate that. Thank you, my sister. I appreciate that. And you as well. You as well. Yes. You know, we're on that same plane. We just do all that we can to help liberate the minds of our people. It's so vitally important. And the more that I get off into this, the more I'm firm in that understanding and in that belief, you know, that that's what we must do. And unfortunately, we have a misleadership that doesn't direct us in that, that doesn't move us in that direction, you know.
Yes, absolutely. So. And I did want to make a quick comment about, because I didn't hear the whole program. Like I said, I was able to snatch the last 20 minutes or so. But when you were talking about Stephen Biko, and you know, as you were playing some of the excerpts, I was thinking about how every black man that stands up to be a black man gets taken out.
Yeah.
Whether it's here, on a continent, wherever, they get taken out.
Yeah.
So single leadership model, we have to do something different because we need our brothers, especially our strong brothers, alive. We don't need them dead.
Yeah, that's right.
And something that a friend and I were talking about, and we've been talking about, he calls it a psychological exodus. Mm. There's been other names, but I think this is really, I believe, this is really a time for us to begin to do that, you know, to exodus from this Caucasian craziness psychologically and to get our own minds together. Because if what we've been doing in the past is basically with one step forward and two step backward, then we got to look at doing something different.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've said it on this program a number of times. You know, the Exodus biblically did not happen. They have debated that, and it's proven that that did not happen. There was no Hebrews that were in Kemet suffering under the sting of the lash, and that Moses led them out. That didn't happen. But we must have an Exodus. I agree with you, my sister. We must have
a psychological one, because you know I'm not down with that written, you know, a word by whoever wrote it. It wasn't us,
right?
So I don't care if it wasn't us. It doesn't relate to me. Universal truths relate to me that they stole, but you know all the other stuff bump it.
Yeah.
But yes, we do. We need to get away from their culture. You know, they're thinking, like you were saying, you know, we have to educate our own. I was listening to Dr. Joy Leary last night, and she had a panel on of young people who were HBCU students, and they talked about how literally mind-blowing it was for them to be amongst other students and teachers and professors that actually cared about them.
Right on.
That was something new to them.
Yeah.
And see, that's who we are. We, you know, as an African people, we are very, very extremely communal and interdependent. Mm-hmm. And we're in this foreign, you know, hostile environment where we don't get that regularly. So when we get it, it's mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. And it blew my mind to hear our young people talk about that. So there's so much that we have to do that only we can do.
Yeah.
Only we can do it. And what that brother said, and then I'll end here, that just called, you know, was right on point. You know, we hyenas hang out with hyenas. You know, we do hyena things.
Yeah.
You know, we don't do things with kangaroos. So let's be a you know, do what Africans do. We work with nature.
Right. Let's be us. Let's be us and with us. You know.
Yes.
And that's our problem, and especially because when we're here, you know, you are in America. And many times because we have been so whitewashed, it's hard for us to understand the impact of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege on our everyday lives, on our minds, and the things that we do and how we do them. It's very hard for us to see that. That's why, to me, as I mentioned earlier, that the educational process for us must begin at the earliest of age as an African-centered education, and it must go all the way through up into high school. So by the time you go into high school or into college, university, or trade school, whatever, you know who you are because you're rooted and grounded in the knowledge of who you are as a culturally historic people. You know the history of us. You know the struggles of us. You know and you know who you ain't. And you know who your enemy is, you see? Because a lot of us don't want to believe that we have an enemy. We're all human beings. You know?
They've done a job on our minds because even when I was 13, I was a straight revolutionary. I knew who the enemy was. I fought, and I've known it for all these years. And to your point, to see the change, you know, in the masses of our people, so many are trying their damnedest to go to the enemy, to be like the enemy, to get in their system instead of going where we belong, where we can continue to be sane at the very least.
Yeah.
Or keep our sanity, rather.
That's right. Well, thank you, my sister. That's Sister Bonisiwa Ayan of Melanin Live every Thursday right here on Time for an Awakening Media. Every Thursday at 7 o'clock. I got it now, my sister. I've been mentioning from 7 to 9 Eastern Time, Melanin Live. All right, my sister.
Brother Oshi, keep doing your thing. You know, yes, we'll be linking up because I love what I heard. You're just like a breath of fresh air.
All right, my sister. Peace to you. Have a blessed day.
Peace and
blessed weekend. All right. 646-646. Good afternoon.
Tokios, what's happening, man? Good show today. Good show today.
Thank
you.
You
know, the amazing thing is most black people don't even know who Stephen Biko is, even with the movie with their favorite actor Denzel playing the brother.
I know.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's the amazing thing.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I just always respected the brother for his stance other than trying to work with white folks on a certain level. But, you know, the way he was treated by the South African was the same manner in which us Africans was treated by the Shizugu.
Yes.
I mean, it's, you know, nobody really tells the truth and put apartheid into the context of really what it was, you know, slavery, Jim Crowism, but just not based on the fact of building the country on the level in which we built this country. It's the same thing that nobody talks about the modern day apartheid in the world right now between Israel and Palestine. It's basically the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really,
oh, definitely.
It's really no different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just unfortunate that we as a people aren't able to connect the dots. And, you know, I would say this, if the Palestinians were deemed to be Africans, I think the same thing would happen with them that happened with the South Africans. You know what I mean? It would have ended by now. But because they're not deemed African, it's not deemed.
Well,
you know what I mean? It's a different form of classism and racism and colorism in play.
Sure.
But
I mean, it's just like that's like Jay in South Africa. That's why I have no desire to go to South Africa, because Caucasians still run it. Just like in Namibia, the Germans still run it. A lot of the parts of it, they still run it. And in Israel, what they have done to the Palestinians and what they're doing to Africans in Israel, even the ones that the European Jews airlifted back about 30 years ago out of Ethiopia, how they are treated. Now, a brother comes on the program, Dr. Ben Orr, of the Black Hebrew Israelites, who, of course, they have their place in Dimona, Israel, and we've talked about that and how, you know, they're able to coexist, you know, because they have some autonomy, I believe, you know. But basically, the European Jews run it. And they, of course, assisted the South African government, you know, with armament, with tactics and practices, guns, nuclear capabilities, because the South Africans got it along with Israel, because the United States got it, and if they got it, they got it.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, it is all part of European
white supremacy.
Exactly. I say European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. Because when you look at it, that's what it is, but it's white supremacy.
And you know what the crazy thing is, that here it is, this is 2020, about to be 2021. We've been over here for over 600 years, and we still are incapable of connecting the dots of the brutality of this white man and seeing him for the filthy, stinking, no good devil that he is. And, you know, it's becoming to a point now to where as the tragedy is growing and growing and growing, and our demise as a people is growing and growing and growing, and we don't seem to get it, man. We're constantly perplexed to love and worship this white man
because they're in
the apartheid system.
Because they're in control of imagery. They're in control of how you feel and what you see, especially right now. Look at the commercials. The commercials constantly with integrated couples. And, of course, right now, it's the sentiment, all the feelings, oh, you know, all this will be. So, you know, it is choreographed and orchestrated by them for that very purpose. It desensitizes you, it sensitizes you, you know, and your feeling. And so you don't. Yeah.
I know you got to go, but I'll leave you with this. The only thing white I want is my teeth and maybe my underwear. And other than that, I don't want nothing white.
There you go, Jay.
I try to get away from everything white.
That's
other
right.
Than white potatoes. And I'm trying to leave them alone. But Oshie, have a beautiful weekend and be safe, my brother.
You too, Jay. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of a person who we have focused on today, Brother Stephen Biko. He said, the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bivahodie. Bivahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful weekend, family. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next week. Peace.